Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Your life, your country. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
This economy has got to work for everyone. And right now, we know that it isn't. And it's going to take all of us coming together to make sure that it does. Necesitamos incluir cada persona en el éxito de esta economía. Pero si queremos hacer eso, necesitamos incluir cada persona en nuestra democracia.
Okay. That, among many moments in the Democrat presidential debate, was revealing on a whole host of levels. We have Beto O'Rourke talking about the economy as if it's, I don't know if it's like 2001 or 2000 after the, internet crash. Like, what economy is he talking about? It's not working for everyone. It's working at every level for every ethnicity. At every part of the United States, the economy is on fire. So what exactly is he talking about? And then the Spanish, I'm sorry, if you're going to speak Spanish, at least sound somewhat native. Your Spanish is terrible. Cory Booker's look at Beto O'Rourke was like the most searched look, single freeze frame of the entire debate. Hilarious. But, I mean, Beto O'Rourke's not going to be president. It was just embarrassing. Do any of you find yourselves wondering, how is it after 2.5 years of Donald Trump, is it that the Democrats have learned nothing? They're not even trying to move a little bit to the middle or to the issues that people care about. There's not even a glimmer of recognition as to why they lost in 2016. In fact, they're running the other way. They're running further away from the type of common sense, practical, more economic, nationalist view of thinking, in my view.
Would your plan cover abortion, Mr. Secretary?
Yes, it would. I don't believe only in reproductive freedom. I believe in reproductive justice. And, you know, what that means is that just because a woman...
Kill the baby.
Or let's also not forget...
No justice
someone
for
in the
baby.
Trans community, a trans female...
Is
poor doesn't mean they shouldn't have the right to exercise that right to choose. And so I absolutely would cover the right to have an abortion.
Julian Castro. Hearing the audience whoop and holler again for abortion. Think about it. Doesn't it remind you of the New York vote for late-term abortion when they gave Cuomo the standing ovation? Cheering what they used to say should be safe, legal, and rare. But now they're cheering for abortion. Reproductive justice. Ah, that's a chilling phrase, is it not? When you're talking about no rights at all for the unborn. But God, this is where they are. This is who they are. This is what they are all about. I mean, the only one who was somewhat interesting is Tulsi Gabbard, and she should just be a Republican. I don't know why she's up there as a Democrat. I mean, she has some liberal views. She just has to change her mind on those views and become a Republican, because she's actually an attractive, anti-military intervention, military vet with a little common sense. Just a little common sense. I'm just looking for a little common sense at this point.
My plan, and I'm glad to see that Senator Booker, Senator Warren, and Governor Inslee agree with me on this, my plan also includes getting rid of Section 1325 of the Immigration and Nationality Act to go back to the way we used to treat this when somebody comes across the border, not to criminalize desperation, to treat that as a civil violation. And
I want to
challenge every single candidate on this stage to support the repeal of Section 1325.
So just so you understand, this means coming into the country illegally means you essentially pay a fine. So we're giving away residency in the United States for a de minimis fine. That's it. So that's the cost of citizenship now. That's the privilege of U.S. citizenship, residency. All the people across the globe who worked for years to play by the rules and apply legally, okay? They're out of luck. Or they're made fools of. I should say it that way. They're just made complete. You guys are complete fools. Julian Castro would make this like jaywalking. Jaywalking across the border. Improper entry by illegal alien. Any alien who enters or attempts to enter the United States at any time or place other than designated by immigration officers, eludes examination by inspection or attempts to enter or obtains entry to the United States by a willfully false or misleading representation shall, for the first commission of any such offense, be fined under Title 18 or imprisoned, not more than 6 months, or both. So it provides for a fine or as much as up to a 6 months imprisonment as it stands now, which in my mind, this is too light. The statute that exists is too lenient. In addition to that, he ends up clarifying that everyone, I mean everyone, should get a pathway to citizenship.
You talked about putting people on a path to citizenship who are here without documents. Would that be something immediate? Are you saying those all people in that category should be given a path to citizenship?
If you have not committed a serious crime, then I think that you should be put on a pathway to earn citizenship. Okay. If somebody has committed a serious crime, of course, we should punish that crime.
I thought I heard that. Thank you.
This means that someone who commits, let's say, two DWIs, or let's say you got into a simple bar fight, okay? Bar fight, maybe you knocked a guy unconscious, maybe he hit his head, maybe he can't move now. That's not a serious offense. That's a first-time misdemeanor assault. Oh, you had a couple DWIs until you have the third when you get seven people dead in New Hampshire. See, any interviewer or any host worth his or her salt, any moderator of a debate would have said, what do you think about the guy who ended up killing seven people in New Hampshire over the weekend? He wasn't deported after two misdemeanors and a Class A felony. Do you think that was wrong? What about the girl who was raped repeatedly in Alabama? The man was arrested, had been deported twice, came back into the country illegally. What about him? You know, the moderators were just, it was embarrassing. No one answered questions. For the first hour, every time a question was asked, there was just a stump speech. There was no answer to most questions. It was bromide after bromide after bromide after cliche after bumper sticker out of statement that was out of touch with reality. I want to thank all of our great sponsors, including Genucel, Delta Animal Rescue, and Sheiks, because they help provide this podcast to you free of charge every week. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast, and I have to say the race to radicalism on the left and last night was quite something. And I think the interesting thing that emerged is that a non-interventionist former military vet, Tulsi Gabbard, ended up being the most searched name during the debate, according to Google. Someone that most people don't know who came across, you know, look, she's not conservative, but she came across on a few issues as somewhat reasonable. And she didn't come across as anti-American or negative on American history or the American understanding. So what does this tell us? Joining us now is Pat Buchanan, conservative commentator, columnist, author. Pat, your quick take on last night.
Well, first, you've taken my quick take. My title, my column tomorrow, working title, which I just started on, is Memo to Trump, Trade Bolton for Tulsi.
Listen,
I thought, you know, they kept her out of the first half, you know, and I had predicted to Newsmax that she would make a real splash here and she would take up the foreign policy issue with her unique perspective from the Democratic Party standpoint. And she hadn't had a chance. And then in the second half, I thought she did remarkably well with the time she was given. And she introduced the whole idea of foreign policy, which was pretty much eliminated from the debate, which is crucial. So I think what she's done, she won the Washington Examiner poll, the Drudge poll. A lot of folks have praised her performance. And I think she's achieved the key thing that she had to achieve, Laura, which is move herself up from 1% or wherever she's at to 2, 3, or 4 so that she gets into the next round of debates. And I think she's accomplished that, and I think she's going to get a real response. It's only a partial slice of the nation, but she impressed an awful lot of people.
Right.
I thought it was a good debate. I was interested in it, and it told us a lot about that party. I'd hate to be a hedge fund operator up in New York if they get elected.
Oh, no. This is...
They all go to the wall.
This they free the illegal immigrants from the detention facilities and put the hedge fund people in the detention camps. That's kind
that's of what exactly that's... right. And there aren't going to be any blankets.
No blankets or no aluminum foil blankets for them. This is Tulsi Gabbard, of course, from Hawaii last night.
We have to bring our troops home from Afghanistan. We are in a place in Afghanistan where we have lost so many lives. We've spent so much money, money that's coming out of every one of our pockets, money that should be going into communities here at home, meeting the needs of the people here at home. We are no better off in Afghanistan today than we were when this war began.
She sounds like Trump sounded in 2016. She Unfortunately, Trump didn't pull the troops out.
Well, exactly right. I think she's done a number of things that, again, she put herself on the map. There's a lot of comments about her. People are saying she did it. She's one of the big winners, but she's got a unique position. She's introduced foreign policy into the Democratic debate. I think folks are going to have to talk about it more. And I think that she's going to get, even if it's not majority support, even if she doesn't win, I think she's going to influence the debate. So it was a great victory for her. But I should mention, there are others, and I'm not big fans of them, I thought did pretty well from their standpoint. And one was Mayor de Blasio.
The first question I would have asked de Blasio.
You don't share that view.
No. You know why? I guess it's colored by the fact that when I go to New York, these blocks that used to be clean and safe when Rudy Giuliani was mayor, or even Bloomberg was mayor, are filthy, filled with human waste, and disgusting, and the pot smell everywhere. So, the first question I would have asked him is, why do New Yorkers hate you? That's what I would have asked him. So yeah, he bloviated on, and he's a big guy and a tough talker, but. I don't know. I'm always focused on people who have a chance of winning, and he doesn't. He has no chance of winning. But
the one that did an awful lot of talking, I think more than anyone else, was Beto and Cory Booker. Yeah. But Cory Booker is. I mean, he seems like a nice guy, but can you remember exactly what he said? What exact point he made? I mean, he goes on and on and on. And then then Beto, I thought, was on defensive all night long. But I do think Elizabeth, let me talk about the number one, folks. That's Elizabeth Warren. I mean, she dominated the first half hour of the debate. She made her crisp responses. She's energetic. She's got her lines down. It has a real appeal to the left of the party. But I will say this, as a general election candidate, and she has the best chance to be there, she lacks the, if you will, the extra dimension. I mean, of course, Trump had this extra dimension from The Apprentice and from being a character and a big figure and everything. And she seems like almost pure ideology, an extract of ideology. And you need some persona, personality and range, I think, candidates do. We all familiar. I mean, when Ronald Reagan walked in the first time he was elected, I mean, he came to a governor's conference in his cowboy hat and boots and all of this, and he just made a tremendous splash. And for a candidate to succeed, to be elected president of the United States, I think they need something of that extra dimension.
Yeah, I think you're right. Donnie Deutsch from MSNBC, you remember him, Pat? He was on.
Yeah, I know Donnie.
Yeah, he was on last night after the debate and said this.
I do not believe Elizabeth Warren on stage with Donald Trump beats him. And I think if we're honest with ourselves and we look harder at ourselves, I think a lot of people agree with me. When he can blanket Elizabeth Warren as a socialist and he's on stage with her, the Democrats lose. I still, in my heart of hearts, don't see anybody on that stage tonight that would beat Trump.
I know Donnie pretty well. I mean, I worked with him up at MSNBC mm-hmm. for years. And I don't usually agree with him, but I think he's dead right here. I mean, I'm looking at the state. This is why, let me go back to to the de Blasio. Whatever you think about it, he's a big presence on stage. He, you know, he's angry, he's committed, and there's a difference to the size of the guy. I'm not, he's the least popular figure in New York City, perhaps. But, you know, he's somebody who would, when he came out on stage, he would say, this is going to be a heavyweight fight. And I think if you, that Elizabeth Warren, as I say, you got to get beyond the, you know, the neo-socialist ideology, you know, government, we're going to do this, we're going to pay for the kids, we're going to take care of this, we're going to tax the rich, all of these things. She doesn't go beyond that. And this, again, let me get back to Tulsi Gabbard, who's physically a very, very attractive woman. And she looks like, you know, and looks very bright, and she's crisp, and she's talking about different things, you know, foreign policy, getting our troops home from war. She's been a, you know, an officer over there in Kuwait and Iraq. And so she's got that, she has an extra dimension. I know she's started at 1%, but I hope for the sake of a, you know, a really interesting election, that she really rises up and is in the semifinals, if you will, of the Democratic nomination run.
Well, I think, again, I said to my producer this morning, Tulsi Gabbard should just be a Republican. I mean, she should just say, you know, on a lot of these other issues, the Democrat Party has gone so far left, I can't really relate to them. I'm seeing where the country is, and I'm going to run as a Republican. I just don't see her as a Democrat today. I really don't. I don't see her
well,
as a—
Well, I don't see her getting the nomination.
No.
At all, but I do see, I mean, in terms of the debate, which I'm interested— Otherwise, you know, we're all— I mean, there was no—at the end of the debate, they asked everybody what was a great threat, and I think the majority said China and climate change, although de Blasio said Russia because they're interfering with our democracy, which wasn't much of a good answer in my judgment, but it was different. And the one fellow said Trump and things. But they talked—I mean, when you talk about China, you're talking about foreign policy. And there was really no focus on it last night. But again, I think if there's a focus on it tonight, it will be because of her.
By the way, we have other news that we're going to get to. Pat, the Supreme Court, with John Roberts voting with the liberals, held that the addition of the citizenship question to the 2020 census does not violate the Constitution's enumerations clause of the Census Act, but that the district court was warranted in remanding the case to the Department of Commerce to provide a non-pretextual explanation for adding the question. So, in other words, it's not a victory for the conservative jurists. It's not a full victory for the left, but John Roberts voted with the liberals on this. So,
what
I think
is the effect of the decision?
I think
on the census question.
Yeah, I think the question regarding citizenship cannot go in, and the July 1st, I think, is when the census has to be printed. So the census questionnaire has to be printed, or something. It's going to the printers probably
so
July 1st.
It was a defeat for Trump and the Commerce Department. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. So we got, well, I mean, how is it that the liberals never, ever, they never evolve to a more originalist understanding of the Constitution, but our people always, except for the stars like Justice Thomas, they, you know, our people never, you know, just seem to one after the other evolve to the left.
You know, I wrote something on that. I went back to all the Supreme Court justices appointed by Democrats, and there weren't that many. There was Goldberg and Fortas. And then you get up to all the way up to Carter. I don't think got any. You get up to Clinton. You get Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and you get Kagan, and you get Sotomayor. There was not a single Democratic liberal who moved away from the liberal position. But you get the Republican appointees. Three of Nixon's four nominees voted for Roe v. Wade. Oh. We know about Souter. You know about the other Republicans, John Paul Stevens, and the others who have gone south. It is remarkable. You're right. Some of ours, a significant slice of ours, turn into moderates like Sandra Day O'Connor, and some of them go left like Souter and John Paul Stevens. And it's remarkable. I think it's the effect of the culture, which is clearly moving leftward, and the stare decisis, the, you know, take the Warren Court decisions and make sure those stand. But you're right. The Supreme Court has moved the country steadily leftward. And we've had many great justices appointed, or not many, a number of them, like Scalia and Thomas. But overall, and Alito, but overall, that's not the case.
Disappointment.
It's the disappointment with the Supreme Court on the part of conservatives has been in effect since we used to, since we had old Uncle Earl Warren on the bench.
No, it's in Brett Kavanaugh and a number of decisions has been a complete and utter disappointment. I think it's the human condition, right? It's easier to be liked than to be principled.
Sure, you're in the city. You're in the city, and you don't want somebody throwing a salad on you or something when you're going into the restaurant.
You know what I say, Pat? If they throw food at me, I always like. No, please, remember, I'm gluten-free. Could you make sure that... I told that to Nigel Farage. Pat, I told that to Nigel Farage when I was in London for the D-Day stuff. I met with him at a pub, and I said, next time they throw a milkshake with you, Britt, you should have a straw in your coat pocket, pull it out and sip it. Sip a little bit of it from your lapel and say, I really prefer strawberry. I mean, you just have to laugh. Like the Trump baby balloon. If I were Trump, I would say I love the baby balloon because I love Trump and I love babies. So I love the Trump baby balloon. He should just adopt it as his own. Then they won't fly it anymore.
Demand it be put up on his foreign trips, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. He should fly his own Trump baby balloon. It'd be hilarious. I would just, because they're all so ridiculous. These are not serious people. That the power of satire and ridicule, as Pat knows, because he's so funny. There's awesome. Anyway, I want to get back to the Democrats for a moment because, of course, the Democrats have to say that the economy is no good, despite the right track, wrong track numbers, which just came out that show incredible improvement since Obama, with more people thinking now that we're going on the right track than the wrong track as compared to Obama. So this is what some of them said about today's economy. Let's listen.
When you've got an economy that does great for those with money and isn't doing great for everyone else, that is corruption, pure and simple, we need to call it out.
We have people that work full-time jobs and still can't make a living wage. It is about time that we have an economy that works for everybody, not just the wealthiest in our nation.
Right now, we have a system that favors those who can pay for access and outcomes.
What kind of, are they talking about the economy after the internet crash in 2000, like March 2000?
It is unbelievable when you get Hispanic unemployment and African American unemployment and white unemployment at their lowest levels almost in 50 years, and you've seen the steady growth of the economy under Trump. And to talk about it as though we're in, 1931 or something like that is just preposterous. But again, what speaks for the Democratic Party is this ideology. I mean, the anti-corp. I mean, look, I'm not. You've got a populist streak in me, and I'm not an enthusiast of these transnational corporations. Mm-hmm. But they act as though the capitalist system is somehow the enemy of the American people and the American nation, and those who succeed most are the worst enemies. And it's remarkable. But I think again. When Elizabeth Warren does that in the context of a Democratic debate and a Democratic audience, that may come off very well. But when you go out into a debate with Trump, and she starts that, and his answers about the unemployment numbers and how well we have done, and the American people, I think, will understand that as the polls show, that this is not 1929.
Yeah, he did that on Sunday with Stephanopoulos, I believe it was, or was it Chuck Todd, I guess. And he's like, look at this chart. The chart shows that the economy, this is a Chuck Todd, the economy has been improving since Obama. And Trump, this is like stuff Trump knows, okay? Trump looks at him and goes, oh, really, where's that chart for GDP? And where's that chart for confidence and right track? I mean, where are the other charts that actually matter? And Chuck Todd's like, wait, is there a producer in my ear? Can give me a rejoinder to that? They don't have. These aren't serious people. These are people who Google before they you know, get on air, and they're going to try to tell us that up is down and left is right, and that just doesn't resonate ultimately. But I think what does resonate back to Tulsi Gabbard, Pat, is this idea that America is funding the world as we have men and women defecating outside about 200 yards from the Capitol, which is what we have. So what's going on here with that?
Well, this is something. This argument's been going on since the end of the Cold War about America's foreign policy. Having won the Cold War, why didn't we just, and having seen the Soviet Empire collapse and the Soviet Union break apart into 15 pieces, why didn't we tell the Europeans, look, our job is done. We've defended you for all these years. Now, Europe is your responsibility. You're many times more richer and potentially more powerful than Russia. So you're going to have to undertake this. And Tulsi Gabbard has reignited that debate, I think. And frankly, with the Trump presidency, while Trump speaks correctly, we got as many troops in the Middle East now as we'd had when he took office, and more are going there, and we're very, very close to some kind of collision with Iran, which I don't think Trump wants, and the Iranians don't want, and we don't want. So I think Tulsi Gabbard has really reintroduced this issue from the side of the Democratic Party. And again, Trump, the president's sort of having it both ways. He's got the bellicosity, and he's got new wars, but he's got the bellicosity, and we have these issues sitting out there on the table: Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, Libya. All of these. What exactly are we going to do? Are we going to pull out? And I will say that that guy who was there, the Ohio congressman, was arguing with Tulsi.
Tim Ryan.
He said, you know, we got to remain engaged. And there's no doubt about it, if you pull out of Afghanistan, the Taliban are very likely to take over after a so-called decent interval.
But we can say that always. Every time America leaves, another person's
going
to take over. Yeah, well, okay, so then we're never going to leave anywhere.
Well, I think that's exactly right. And you know, it goes back to the situation we confronted when we were with Nixon in Vietnam. You say, if you pull the American troops out, that you're taking the risk of having a Holocaust there in Cambodia, which did occur, and of having just a massive takeover and murders of all our friends and allies in South Vietnam and in Laos, which is what happened in 1 million boat people in the South China Sea. And people look at the consequences of pulling the plug, and there's a real hesitancy to do it. And I think that affects the Pentagon today and the State Department. Everybody knows the risk you're going to take if you pull out. And they're not willing to pull out.
No, they don't. And no one wants the narrative to be, you know, the last helicopter.
He lost the war.
Yeah, the last helicopter out of Kabul under X, you know, under whatever president. They're petrified of it. If you could give Trump advice, Pat, in the next, you know, this next year and a half before the election, just campaign advice, what would it be?
Well, you know, and this is more tactical than strategic. Well, strategically, I would say, you know, stay out of a war. If you can avoid a war, I don't think the Iranians want a war, but the country doesn't want another war, and I would stay out of a war. Tactically, I would just let the Democrats drift further and further to the left, you know, collect the string on what they're saying and what they've got in mind. Put it all down on tape, and then as the candidate emerges, I think really zero in. If it's a referendum of versus Trump versus no Trump, that's a real risk for the Republicans given the controversy surrounding the president and his poll numbers, and he's not gotten over 50%. But if it's Trump versus, socialist Elizabeth Warren, then you got Donnie George's thesis becomes operative. So if you get down to I think Trump can beat any one of the candidates I've seen that's out there right now. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's going to have to wait until somebody emerges, and then really, as I say, collect all the things they've said and promised so that you make it a contest between what we've got and the socialism and all the rest these people are promising, and what they're going to do leaving the borders wide open, and what they're going to do to the economy, and what they're going to do to tax rates for corporations going back to 37%, and what they're going to do to taxes on the well-to-do of successful Americans. Yeah. And do all, and I think you've got a tremendous case, but it's when you got us versus them rather than us versus us that I think you'll do better.
And Pat, I have to say, when looking at the, you know, the field and listening to them last night, I hearken back to Trump in the debate with Hillary, where it, there was just a few moments, I think, that defined the whole thing. It was the when he said, you want to rip the baby right out of the womb and kill the baby. Like when he looked at, I think he won the election just when he said that. And it
well,
was just,
you know, that's exactly right. And what they
and now they're worse. Here. That's my point. Now the party's even gone further than that. That's what I'm saying. The Democrats haven't learned much. If anything,
I think you're, that's exactly. See, when they're in their own group, they can sit there and talk with each other, and each of them moves further and further to the left, and the boldest one pulls them further. But they don't realize they're being pulled out of the center of politics, further and further outside the mainstream of America. They're with their own group. And this is what happened to the Democratic Party in 2016. When they suddenly went to middle America, they said, wait a minute, all these folks who used to be with us are gone. And they thought they were doing a wonderful thing. And so I think the same thing is happening now. I mean, it's every time somebody comes through, and what do they say? Open borders, and we're not going to arrest anybody coming in, and it's a civil offense, not a crime, just break into the United States, and we're going to abolish ICE. And you get to me, and we got this border is not simply going to be this tragic situation of this man and his daughter by the time you get there. You're going to be talking, I think, in 2020 about the survival of the United States as one nation and one people, or whether we've got wide open borders and anybody can walk in.
Yeah, I mean, again, Trump has like 3 points to make. You know, you would turn crossing the border into a civil jaywalking offense. Okay, it's basically jaywalking across the border. Number two,
open borders.
Yeah, exactly. Number two, you want to kill even children who are already born. And number three, you believe in massive wealth confiscation, including taxes on personal property. Federal wealth tax on personal property, which is what they also were trying to unpack after the debate in various interviews. Like, how would you do that? Would you go to people's houses and look at their sculptures? Or like, and I think most people just see this, Pat, and they're like, yeah, Pat, they'd be going after all of your political memorabilia with Reagan and Nixon.
If it's 50 million, I don't quite reach the cutoff point here.
Exactly. Well, all these people like Soros and the Disney heiress,
they can go get all his stuff.
Yeah, exactly. But all these people say we want to be taxed more. There's a provision in the tax code that allows people to actually write bigger checks to the IRS. So these people are all big talkers, but they'll never just do it.
An example for the rest of us.
Yeah, you go first. How's that? You go first. Pat Buchanan, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'll have you on soon in the Laura Ingraham podcast. We've got a lot of people on the line. Let's go to Darren in Florida, who watched the Democrat debate. Darren, tell us what you thought.
Well, I don't really know how to explain it, except for I just saw circus bus showing up. And I can tell you that I think the front runner, after reviewing the show, Cory Booker was a deer in the headlights. Elizabeth Warren is out of touch. De Blasio looked like a stooge. John Delaney looked like a dude. I mean, and Beto, he's dying for his life.
Yeah, it just wasn't unfortunate. Tulsi Gabbard was definitely the best of all of them. I think we've all concluded that. Drudge, as usual, was right about that and his postings. And it's just, she's the best. I mean, she's attractive. She's, again, if you just despise Trump, period, and you're non-interventionist, you have to vote for Tulsi Gabbard. Phil in Texas. Phil, welcome. Your thoughts about the debate last night.
Laura, I'm telling you something. I thought that Elizabeth Warren was shaken more than Angela Merkel and Hillary Clinton combined. She was shaken more. It was crazy. I thought she looked like my sweet late mama, who ended up whenever she'd get mad at us boys, she would start getting so angry that she was, her head would start shaking and her voice would start to vibrate and her eyes would bug out. She looks like this constantly. It kind of reminds me of her. And I thought of her like, this is the way Elizabeth is all the time. This is kind of scary. She's going to end up like Hillary with one of those air conditioners on her back if she's not careful.
Yeah, something, I don't know. She just, it's the way she talks. It's not very, we've got to get these, by golly, these corporations to give more money. Oh my God. You mentioned listening to that. No, thanks. I want to remind everybody that summer months, you got to be good to your skin. That means the skin on your chin, your neck, especially vulnerable in the sun and the wind and everything else you're dealing with this summer. So Genucel Jawline Cream is awesome. It's a beautiful texture. It's going to make your skin look better. You'll feel it. You'll see it. And remember, with Genucel's special warranty and 100% of your money back guaranteed, you don't have to worry about it. No questions asked. And so many people over the years have told us, thank you, Laura, for recommending Genucel. I use the under eye bags and puffiness clear gel. It's just awesome and light. I travel with it. But the Genucel jawline cream is phenomenal as well. And it has this MDL technology. And that basically targets that delicate skin on the neck area for tighter, healthier, younger looking skin. So I want you to text now to 77453, okay? So you text the word EYES1, EYES1, to 77453 or go to genucel.com.
Is there a role for the federal government in order to play in order to get these guns off the streets?
Someone's got my binder.
What's
happening?
We are hearing our colleagues' audio. If the control room can turn off the mics.
Y'all are trying to be the main guest.
Yeah, if the control room can turn off the mics of our previous moderators, we will.
I think it's the prior moderators.
What, guys? We are going to take a quick break. Yeah. We're going to get this technical situation fixed. We will be right back.
That was right as my show was starting. We were so happy. Sorry. Happy that our show was starting and everyone's flipping away from there to watch the Ingram angle. Oh, no. That's. I mean, look, technical things do happen, and I'm not. We shouldn't gloat about anyone else's technical problems. Yeah, well, it could have been a little wink from up above, a wink. Guys, gonna keep a check on you to see if you're on your toes. But when stuff like that happens, as it has happened to me, as a host, there's just nothing you can do. I mean, you're not the technical person. You can't you're the host, so you're assuming that everything is going to work out. So I actually felt bad for the MSNBC people. They can't do anything about it. It's not their fault. But I'd hate to be that technical director when that happened. That would not be a good situation. I kept thinking of Astro from the Jetsons. Ruh-roh! Kill the mic! The mic is looking... Imagine if they said something really juicy. That would have been really fun. Joining us now is Byron York, chief political correspondent for the Washington Examiner, Fox News contributor. Byron, the left listening to this debate on radio and watching on television... They probably got a little something, a little taste of the issues that they liked, and there was something in it probably for everyone. But the commentators afterward, there was a lot of negativity toward the stage. This was Stephen Colbert talking about Booker and some of the others speaking in Spanish.
When the topic turned to the border crisis, Booker took Beto's Spanish and raised him mucho más.
La situación ahora es inaceptable. Este presidente ha atacado, ha demonizado los inmigrantes. Es inaceptable. Voy a cambiar este.
Oh, snap! It is on. It is an Espanol off. Or as they say in Spanish, grupo de idiotas.
Oh, that was embarrassing. I mean, is it a Telemundo debate or is it an MSNBC debate? Byron York, your reaction to the pandering fest that we saw?
You know, actually, on that very issue, the Spanish issue, I believe
Julian Castro, who most people thought had a pretty good night, and did speak like a little bit of Spanish, like, my name is Julian Castro and I want to be president. He, I believe by all accounts, first of all, he's the only Hispanic candidate in the race, and he does not speak Spanish. So a message from Julian Castro saying it's fine to speak Spanish, but the language of success in the United States is English. Learn it. Be proficient in it. It will help you through your life to succeed in the United States. I mean, that would have been an amazing message. Wouldn't have been very popular in the room, but it would have been true.
What I found sad about this whole entire exercise is that so many of them were making obvious grammatical errors in English. I kept saying to my producers, could we master the subject verb direct object thing in English first before we venture into the world of Spanish? Because that just didn't really hold up. This was a moment with Elizabeth Warren that's gotten a lot of attention. Let's listen.
Senator Warren, you signed on to Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All plan. It would put essentially everybody on Medicare and then eliminate private plans that offer similar coverage. Is that the plan or path that you would pursue as president?
So, yes, I'm with Bernie on Medicare for All. And I understand there are a lot of politicians who say, oh, it's just not possible. We just can't do it. It's have a lot of political reasons for this. What they're really telling you is they just won't fight for it. Well, health care is a basic human right, and I will fight for basic human rights.
Your reaction to that, Byron?
Well, she will fight to take away the private insurance of millions of Americans who are happy and satisfied with that insurance. You know, later in one of his many interruptions, Bill de Blasio was saying that the private insurance system doesn't work for tens of millions of people. Well, it does work for tens of millions of people. And the candidate whose name, oh gosh, his name just went out of my head, who said, look, we should not be the party of taking things away from people. That's not a great idea. You have to give Elizabeth Warren credit, I guess, when they were asked for a show of hands, like who would put an end to private health insurance in this country, and she raised her hand very quickly.
Shot up.
Absolutely shot up, and most of the others did not. Even among this group of Democrats, and they, you know, they did go so far to the left. I mean, anytime somebody say, oh, you know, this talk about how far the Democratic Party has gone to the left, that's just an exaggeration. That's just a bunch of pundit talk. No, it's really true. They were there. But even they would not go as far as her on that health care issue.
And Byron, we said before with Pat Buchanan, it seems like literally the Democrats have learned nothing since 2016. I mean, other than Tulsi Gabbard, who was good on the non-interventionism and focusing on America, she was doing kind of America First, a version of that last night. But other than she, I don't see a lot of glimmers of recognition as to why Trump won. And they were talking about an economy that doesn't exist. They were saying, they're talking about the economy like it was March 2000 when the internet crash happened.
I know. Well, first of all, it's just very common for Democrats to say whatever the economy, if there's a Republican in the White House, to say whatever the economy is the worst economy since the Great Depression. And that's, you know, and the thing is that, you know, in 2008, that worked. In 2008 and 2009, and Barack Obama had to deal with a terrible economic downturn. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't work now. And so I think they're having a difficult time with this. I think there's a theme that we will see more about when we finally see Joe Biden appear, and that is there is this tension in the Democratic Party between a desire to restore, that is, just go back to the way things were before Donald Trump and just say, oh, he's such a terrible man, we made a terrible mistake electing him, it's just awful, let's just go back to the way it was before, or we want to fundamentally transform America. And there is this, it's just this Democratic impulse to say they want to fundamentally transform America. They want to take all your guns away. They want to raise your taxes to 80%. They want to take away your private insurance. They want to open the borders up. I mean, they just want to do all this stuff and, again, help themselves. And it'll be interesting to see how much Biden or how he balances this idea of restoration, because he is the physical embodiment of restoration. He's Barack Obama's vice president. Let's just go back to the way it was before January of 2017. That versus fundamental transformation.
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, it'll be interesting to watch what happens in the second debate, but I didn't see anyone on that stage who I think had a real chance of being the nominee.
Yeah.
Beating Trump. I mean, Trump has an answer for literally every single point that they're making. With,
you know,
an easy answer.
Also, I think maybe the more I do this, I mean, a lot of my political analysis becomes so incredibly simple.
Yeah.
And my analysis of this race right now is Trump is big and they are small.
Mm.
And maybe that will change with, you know, Trump versus one Democrat, the Democratic nominee. But right now, I mean, the president is just so much bigger than any of them are. And I think that voters would probably, on the whole, decide to keep the president in office in that case. It really, really overshadows everybody in this race right now.
No, and I'm imagining the debates. You know, I'm imagining the debates, you know, unless there's a catastrophic economic collapse.
Yeah.
The debates, I think of Hillary and the moments that really stood out in those debates where he just flattened her. And I think it's even easier now because the stuff he's done has worked for the most part.
And yeah, he does have a record. I mean, that's what happens when you're president. And you're right about the economy. I mean, first of all, Democrats are going to be just bending over backwards to talk down the economy mm-hmm. next year, to tell us that we are headed for a recession, to tell us that wages and income and everything's going down, and that we're headed for disaster if we stay on this course. And they'll get a lot of megaphoning in the press as well. I mean, who knows? Maybe some indicators will go down. We can't tell the future. But if the economy mm-hmm. stays in good shape as it is, right now, the president has this record. And with Republicans, his record on judicial nominations is, you know, very, very strong. I mean, you can't even find any never-Trumpers who disapprove of what he's done on judicial nominations. So, you know, I think that he'll have a very strong case to make.
Yeah, and we should also mention that the issue of Russia didn't come up. Russia wasn't mentioned till 100 minutes into the debate.
Yeah.
So I thought Russia was the big threat to the United States, and China was mentioned only in passing. So the biggest threat to the United States.
They were asked. They were asked the old question. It's kind of the Mitt Romney thing, which is, who is the biggest geopolitical adversary of the United States? Mm-hmm. And most of them said China. One very clever one said Donald Trump. A number of them said climate change, and I believe one, maybe it was Bill de Blasio, said Russia, because they're attacking our democracy.
Mm-hmm.
So the Russia in the sense of you know, fixing the election to install Donald Trump just didn't come up.
Yeah, this is, again, the word I would use to describe it, other than circus, is disconnect. It's a disconnect to the way most people live and think. Terry McAuliffe, former Virginia governor, I guess he's going to be running again for governor, said this. Let's listen.
I'm a little disappointed. I think we needed to have more discussion on those issues that actually affect Americans every single day. We spent a lot of time on Medicare for All, but people sitting home, Anderson, right now, they're worried about their prescription drug costs. They're worried about getting in a car and, you know, driving and spend an hour and a half to go see their kids play a ball game. We needed more discussion on those issues that affect Americans.
I don't understand the ball game. People are worried about driving to the ball game because of gas prices? What? Well, I don't understand that. But his point about the other issues is probably correct.
The president himself talks about prescription drugs a lot.
Yeah, and they just lowering the prices with the transparency provision they just did. So I'm not getting that at all.
Yeah, so the president actually has something to talk about mm-hmm. on that front. And here again, he's got the economy. He's got, and the interesting thing about the economy, not just the GDP, but he has wage growth. That is so important in elections. He has wage growth, really, for the first time in a very long time. Plus judicial nominations for Republicans, plus tax cuts and deregulation for a lot of people in business. And then we'll see what the world looks like. Totally unpredictable. We'll see what the world situation, North Korea, the Middle East, China, et cetera, looks like.
Mm-hmm. Byron York, fascinating. Thank you so much for your perspective from Fox News and the Washington Examiner. Let's go to Mike in Georgia. Mike is a small business owner. He watched some of the debate last night. Mike, go ahead.
Laura, the giveaways that they're talking about, as a business person, I don't see how they're going to fund all the giveaway programs and reducing the student debt and just wiping that out. I've got a men's clothing store in Georgia. We've been here for 45 years, and I
wow.
can assure you small businesses are benefiting from the economy locally and nationally.
Wow, 45 years. God bless you. That's fantastic. Well, we want small business. I'm the biggest champion of small business in the United States. Big business, they're going to be fine, but small business is the backbone of the United States of America. And when the economy is strong for small business, which it is right now, sky's the limit for this great country of ours. So that's an excellent point. I want to thank all of our sponsors who are supporting this show: Delta Animal Rescue, Genucel, and of course Sheiks. They, among many others, bring this podcast to you free every week. And by the way, Donald Trump was having fun when he was on his way to Japan. I guess they were watching part of the debate, and he was his tweets were like boring, and you know, he was tweaking them. Truly unprofessional and only worthy of a fake news organization, which they are, about the technical glitch. So Tulsi Gabbard wins a lot of online polls, but will she win the hearts and minds of the Democrat primary voters? We shall see. We'll continue to bring you all the best analysis, political, cultural, and beyond. Remember, America Now and Forever on the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
It was a crime no one expected, and one many can't forget. 22 Hours, An American Nightmare, a new podcast from WTOP News and Podcast One, details the heinous murders of a D.C. power couple, their 10-year-old son, and housekeeper inside their own home. The chilling messages from the victims being held hostage.
Hey, Nellie, it's Saba.
The complicated trail of evidence and shocking moments from the trial.
She thinks she knows how Darren Wint got inside the house.
His defense team drops a bombshell.
Will this investigation lead to the release of confidential audio recordings from the case?
So it's under general counsel review. I mean, I'm committing to making a transparent court.
22 Hours, An American Nightmare. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts today.